Hey, what's going on, everybody? And welcome to the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast. We are recording here on the evening of September 11th on Thursday night. And we have 2 weeks remaining in the regular season MLB, as well as the fantasy baseball season. I am joined by my partner from the NorCal region, Mr. Jason Anthony at Boom 62. Jay, what is happening? Are you feeling better? I know we were both kind of sick at the same time.
You know, finally on the tail end of it, you got to love when the kids go back to school. There's about a 0% chance you don't get sick with them. A little cesspool at the schools, but finally feeling better. Excited for the grind the last 3 weeks of the season. Man, this is a nitty gritty, and you know, it feels all this work comes down for a little bit of luck. But you know, there's obviously a lot of skill to put yourself in this position. Now it's your guys producing in the crucial moments to kind of get near those big paydays to make all your work for the, you know, the 6 months worthwhile.
Yeah, this is really, it's a crazy time. I remember 2 years ago, I was on a work trip in Europe, and I remember I was in the cut line finals. And of course, all the games are, taking place in the middle of the night. And it's really crazy how my roto body clock would just like wake up at the end. I think it was like 4 a.m. or something, at the end of like the games. So like, you know, the box scores, I just kind of woke up. It was really crazy how that worked. Every single night. So I do not have any of those overall sweats this year. I've got a couple leagues that in main events that I'm chasing, got just hanging in there, like a second place, a fourth place, like, and it's close. So it'd be nice to pull those off, but there's nothing like that sweat for the overall standings. We're going to talk a little bit about that. There are a lot of teams, a lot of recognizable names, a lot of really good players at the top of all these NFBC standings, whether it be draft champions, main event, OC, and an auction, where, by the way, Mike Mager, our colleague, and Mark Winoker have like three of the top four teams. It's insane.
Yeah, didn't Mike win it last year too, the auction championship?
Oh yeah.
Defending overall auction champs in first place. That's impressive stuff.
Yeah. I mean, that'd be something. First 2 years as a fantasy analyst after like 30 years of playing fantasy. And I mean, of course he's won a lot prior, but just like, hey, 2 years as an analyst, 2 years crushing all the auctions, showing you exactly what to do. And I still beat you anyway.
He gives FTN all their employees 10% of those winnings, right? You know, that's part of the contract.
Yes. Which means he gets nothing at the end of that.
That's the fine print.
We got 10 baseball guys. We got 10 baseball people and Jenny, yeah. you've got some interesting stuff going on for yourself. You've actually got a couple teams in the mix. But let's start with the OC, just kind of get the 12-teamer out of the way. This is an interesting contest here where you've got our guy, Carter Gill, FTN guy, like popular guy, former poker player. He's up in the chat all the time talking about his team sweating. He's been in the top five for quite some time. Aaron Jones, a notoriously strong cut line OC player. He's in the mix there in the top three. Thomas Warner is also up there, near the top of TGFBI as well as here. Doug Gruber, of course, John Posner's partner in a lot of drafts. Richard Zito, we know. Glenn Lowy. And then I see a little Matt Modica, Jason Anthony action there at 12 overall.
Matty Mo and I have a team in the top 12. It's a really strong team all year, but we were just really short on closers. And I was able to pick up just kind of piecemeal closers together. And all of a sudden I was able to start six closers. And last week we were able to get 12 saves on the board, which just flew us up the leaderboard. All of a sudden we were in the top 30, top 20. And now we're in top 12. Two stats we have an ability to continue to grow is stay save still and steals. We're lucky enough to we were first overall in total strikeouts. So we were able to start six closers, and I think we're still fourth overall in strikeouts. So we just built those up, and it's been a fun ride to the top. Still a long ways to go to get really a heavy sweat, but it's pretty cool to be in contention in an OC like that.
Yeah, and the cool thing with it is the point swings are massive at times, and with 2.5 weeks to go, I think honestly anything is possible. Right now, I see you guys about 1,500 points behind the OC leader. For example, like Aaron Jones today, he's gone up 410 points overall. I don't want to open up any more tabs and potentially, you know, delay, slow things down here, but man, you know, it's absolutely possible. And you have the exact categories that you want to be chasing. It's a lot easier to get those type of categories in Fab where you have the solid base by have drafting the right starting pitchers. Like your ERA's ratio, you know, whip has been fantastic with guys like Nick Pivetta, Christopher Sanchez, Drew Rasmussen. You know, you really hit the nail on the head there. I mean, even Logan Gilbert has only really contributed the last couple of months, and he, even he hasn't been like necessarily all that sparkling with ratios, but yeah, it's looking good. I think anything can happen, and I like what I see there. By the way, Kellen Arneson, he and his brother Keaton, Kellen is the one who's first overall in the OC. Keaton actually is the guy that created the FanGraphs player rater, which is pretty cool. I think it's his second year in action there. Both have teams in the top 20. So yeah, it's going to be a fun race there. One thing I notice is, you know, a couple of teams in the top, in the top five, had a draft position of, you know, 9 or 11, basically like at the back end of the draft. Looking at the, draft champions, that's been pretty impressive. It's, James Tominey has been, looks like he might be running away with it. He's got about a 1600 point lead on second place. Of course, the DC is a monster contest. It's the 50 round draft and holds 15 teamers. And I'm looking at James, who, by the way, has won an overall title before with NFBC, comes to the live main events. His team, it looks like it was one of the, I guess probably one of the earlier drafts, but he drafted out of the 14 hole. And the guy in second also drafting out of the 14. There really is maybe some method to the madness there. I'm looking at, you know, I'm looking at his team, James, and let's see. I mean, you know, hey, what do you know? Tariq Skubal was his pick there at 14 overall. Someone let him fall there. And he's just got a killer, killer, stellar team. A lot of production from in the later rounds. All these guys like Sal Frelick, Otto Lopez, Lennon Sosa has got 20 bombs. George Springer, the Forgotten, is in the mix. Got a little bit out of Roman Anthony while he was there. And you know what? Maybe even a little bit of kudos to be able to win an overall title with Anthony Volpe on your roster. So Anthony Volpe there is, you know, that would be something if he won the overall title with him there. Looking at the main event, it's been, you know, Todd Hoppe at the top there for quite a long time, pretty much kind of for most of the season. He's just been up there, you know, basically in the top two. Chasing him closely is Greg Martin, another person who drafted towards the back end. I mean, he started his team at 14 overall. He got the drew the 14th pick. He started with the Garrett Crochet, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. combo, and has a whole bunch of solid pitching. You know, all the guys, you know, the AKA quote league winners, your Nick Pivettas, you know, Jacob deGroms. So it's a really, really good team there that he has. And then just, you know, going down the line, Petro, guy's been playing DC, the Diamond Challenge for over 20 years, actually won that Diamond Challenge in the early 2000s twice. He won the first $50,000 grand prize ever in fantasy there. So he's in the mix. The Gilts, an impressive season. Y'all know Andrew Geller one time. He's got, I think, three teams there in the hunt in the top 25. Just, yeah, lots of familiar names here. Rob Silver's in the mix. Toby, Ben Tidd, Chris Cosley. Chris Cosley, great guy. Drafts a lot of Trevor Bauer in the 50th round in his DCs. But nevertheless, his team looks really solid there. So it's always fun to be there in the hunt. My apologies. We have had some technical difficulties. Jason Anthony has dropped off for now. And we'll see if he would be able to come back. If not, I'll try to run this myself, solo pod, as much as possible. I'm having some technical difficulties myself because my Google Doc is keeps freezing. But hey, listen, this is what I do. So let's continue to roll here. Let's see. Just talking about some latest news. I mean, we kind of touched on Anthony Volpe here. He's been playing with a partial labrum tear. So that at least helps explain a little bit the difficulties that he has been going through. He felt a pop on a dive way back on May 3rd and just been dealing with a lot of discomfort. Obviously, he has been absolutely brutal at the plate. Some of the counting stats are there, but the average overall is tanking. Not somebody you can safely even play in 12 teamers over the last couple of months, but he's hitting below the Mendoza. He's hitting 197 with a 248 on base percentage. Jose Caballero, 2 stolen bases on Thursday, or at least last I checked, maybe he has more than that. The MLB leader, he has been stepping in for Volpe at shortstop a little there. Another Yankees note, there was a little information that came out about how the Yankees management had inquired about Paul Skeens earlier before the trade deadline, and even Spencer Jones was brought in for consideration. But that obviously didn't happen. Skeens most likely to sign a long-term extension, but yeah, so he does not go to the evil empire. Paul Skeens goes to toil and never touch 20 wins, probably, so long as he stays with the Pittsburgh Pirates. A little bit of more AL East news. Anthony Santander, who's been out since late May with a left shoulder injury, he's on a rehab assignment. I don't think he's going to be very fantasy helpful at this point. He might help the team in the playoffs and probably will be a good fantasy value in 2026. But until then, Anthony Santander on a rehab assignment, sure, you can pick him up, see what we can get out of him the last 2 weeks. But if it comes at the expense of a solid bat that you're, you know, in good matchup that you are relying on, may not want to start Anthony Santander in these final, you know, kind of crucial weeks. And most likely he may not even be back for until the last week of the season. Other news, you know, we're looking at Mike Trout. You know, I started with some notes about how, like, is this the end of the Mike Trout, you know, fantasy era of just, hey, we love Mike Trout. Like, will there ever be a bounce back? Injuries have really, really taken a toll with him and his career. But since the All-Star break, he's hitting like, you know, 230. He's got the third highest strikeout rate among qualified hitters since the All-Star break. It's like at 37%, pretty damn high. James Wood and Colton Cowser are the two guys that have higher strikeout percentage since the break. Mike Trout did hit a bomb on Thursday in their contest there against the Mariners. And yeah, so that would have been his fourth home run of the that game's tied as we speak, because by the time you're listening to this is already could be Friday, could be the weekend. Let's keep going. Pitchers. Kevin Gausman, what an incredible outing on Thursday. The dude threw a complete game shutout. 2 hits allowed, 9 strikeouts, just 1 walk on 100 pitches. He was somebody that I feel like was slipping in drafts, you know, beyond 150 overall. I think somebody that we continue to kind of say was a good value, like, you know, take advantage of the drop there, of the dip. And, you know, 34 years old, and he's been getting it done. You know, it's, you know, XFIP, Sierra, right around his ERA, kind of in the 3.639 range. The walk rate has been exceptionally low, not as low as his, you know, 3.9% in 2022, but it's at 6.5%. So it's, you know, pretty much right around his career average. And the whip is outstanding. So he's right around 1 on the whip. Kevin Gausman having a phenomenal season. Ryan Weathers is back. Ryan Weathers returned. He had been out for most of the season. He was a top target where available in 15 teamers. And he returned with a fantastic start on Thursday. He threw five innings, no walks, four strikeouts, no runs, and just five hits allowed. Ryan Weathers were available. May not be a huge target in week 26 because they are at Coors. I don't think that's something to necessarily be scared of, but I think it's a situation where you're comparing that start versus another. But I think the days of like at Coors, it's not scary, not as scary as it used to be. At Athletics is almost scarier, especially when you're looking at that minor league park, the fact that, you know, all those guys are crushing it, right? Or most of them, at least. Just bombs on bombs, just incredibly effective at home. Talking about Nick Kurtz as a rookie, coming in a little bit late into the season, hitting 30. He's already at 30. He's going to be very, very highly coveted in fantasy drafts next season. Obviously, Shea Langeliers, he's hit 30 for the first time in his career. Brent Rooker's not quite at 30, but still, you know, lots of ribbies. A really nice season, nevertheless. The one thing I noticed when I was looking up at some of those A's, and it's something that Jason had alluded to in the preseason when we talked about that ballpark in Sutter Park, Sutter Health Park, how some of these guys might be having career high batting averages. And that is something exactly that is happening over there in, with the A's. Like all those guys, just take a look at, you know, how they're doing in average. It's pretty impressive. I think it's obviously something that's repeatable next season, especially because they're going to be playing there again next year. Pretty much everyone but Lawrence Butler, but you got like Nick Kurtz hitting 302. Jacob Wilson is an anomaly, 319 hitter, one of the best contact hitters in the game. So his average is always going to be most likely above 290. You got Tyler Soderstrom, who most of us projected for, the 230, 240 range. He is at 275. He's closing in on potential 30 home run, 100 RBI, 10 stolen base season. And this is a Tyler Soderstrom that I think for a good chunk of the summer was almost unplayable in fantasy. And then Miguel Andujar, and obviously no longer with the team. He hit nearly 300 while he was with them. A lot of interesting guys. The other thing is like a Shea Langeliers, a guy that typically hits 230, 240 if you're lucky. And that guy's kind of hitting around 270. So a lot of, positivity with the BABIP over there. Just something to keep in mind for next year. Just keep attacking those minor league ballparks. Couple of kids, Connelly Early, man, what an incredible start for him for the Red Sox. He's kind of taken a little bit of shine off of Peyton Toll, the other rookie that came up a couple weeks ago, who's now had a tough time after his debut. But Connelly Early was incredible, and he is lining up for a two-start week in week 26. At least that's the way it looks right now. Connelly Early is most likely going to make his next start against the A's on Tuesday and should fall into a start with the in Tampa the following week. So that's what we got there with him. Looking at some fab potential pitchers for next week. One of the guys that I stashed in a 12-team OC this past weekend, who is setting up really nicely, is kind of having a second half breakout, and this comes at a much later age for him, in his 30s, is 32-year-old Jason Alexander. He has been absolutely phenomenal over the last few weeks, the most recent being a 7-inning 3-hitter, no runs allowed, just 3 strikeouts, but it was against the Blue Jays in Toronto. Thought that was pretty impressive. So he is going to line up for a 2-start week at home against the Rangers and against the Mariners. Two teams, obviously, they're competing for with the division. It's going to be tight games, perhaps not a very high run total in those contests, and those kind of set up nicely for him. He is available in about 74% of online championships. So that's a guy to consider there. Joey Cantillo for the Cleveland Guardians is coming off one heck of a start. He was highly targeted in 15 teamers wherever he was available. He was kind of sent down to the minors for a bit, not for any particular skill or performance related matter. He came back up, made a couple of starts. The problem with the Guardians right now is they are on a 6-man rotation. So, you know, and they got John Means likely to make a start. The Guardians are going to play two games on Saturday, next Saturday, that is, near the end of week 26, a doubleheader. John Means might be ready to get in there. But other than that, I mean, you're not going to get a two-start week out of any Guardians for the rest of the year. But if you're looking to dig in for some ratios or from, you know, depending on the matchup, potentially a win, you might go there. But I think for the most part, like, you know, the Guardians are playing at Detroit next week and then at Minnesota. And if you're chasing wins, I don't know if that's exactly the best place to go. And then Tyler Wells, who has not pitched up until basically all season up until last week, had a really nice debut. He's going to get another start here next Tuesday. Another potential target. He's going to get the White Sox, and the Orioles do play 7 games in week 26. So them also running a 6-man rotation out means somebody gets a 2-start week. That's going to be Kyle Bradish. So those folks that picked up Kyle Bradish, hopefully going to be in a good position there. He is going to draw 2 starts. He's going to get a start at the White Sox on next Monday, the 15th. And then he's going to get the Yankees towards the end of the weekend. Let's see what else we got here. Kind of, you know, running solo at this point, still a little nasally. I'm going on 2+ weeks sick. Kind of sucks. And I got back into hockey for a while, because y'all know, for those that follow me, my son started playing about a year and a half ago. He's on a travel team now. I'm pretty excited about it. Become like a hockey dad, not too crazy one, but you know, still a hockey dad nevertheless. And I started playing because of it. I hadn't played since high school, so literally 20+ years that I had not played competitive hockey, and got back into beer league. Started doing some scrimmages with some dudes my age, and I'm just starting to feel good again, like wondering why I took those 20-25+ years off and just like kind of just doubting everything. And then boom, just like one injury, of course, at this age, that's the stuff that happens. A big muscle strain, and it knocked me out for about 3 weeks. And as soon as I got over that, got sick. So it's now been a month since I've been on the ice. And, speaking of ice, we're going to, pivot over to, let's see, man, I am really struggling here. I was doing so good. I had momentum. Now it's getting really late. Jason, I don't think the internet issues seem pretty serious. I do not know if he's coming back. So I'm going to keep this going. I was going to tell you about some of the matchups for next week or some of the potential streamers that we would be looking to target. And they're going to be about 10 teams in week 26 that play 7 games. The ones that stand out as far as matchups are concerned, players where you might be wanting to look at streamers for, might be the Blue Jays and the Yankees. The Blue Jays are going to play 4 games at Tampa. Then they'll play 3 at KC. The Yankees are going to play they're going to be on the road all week next week. 3 at Minnesota, 4 at Baltimore. And then the Braves, they're going to play 7 as well. I kind of like their matchups too. But they are getting 4 at the Nationals and then 3 at Detroit. And, obviously Detroit staff outside of Skubal, I don't think is as obviously as solid as they were in the first half of the year, obviously suffering a lot of injuries. Jack Flaherty really kind of flailing all over the place. Three bad starts in a row, then a gem. Very hard to predict, how his next start's going to go. But the matchups for the Braves against the Nationals, 2 of those are a doubleheader. So they're going to play a doubleheader with the Nationals next Monday through Thursday. So those are kind of the 7-game teams that I like. The teams playing 6 that have nice schedules, you may want to look at some hitters there. Obviously, the Rockies, they are going to play six at home, and they're going to face the Marlins and the Angels. I feel like that's a pretty good start. And we've got the Red Sox. You know, I mean, the lineup is doesn't feel the same without Roman Anthony. But Trevor Story's having a phenomenal season, just an incredible season. I feel like every article that we see in the offseason is going to be about how Trevor Story is a trap. Don't draft Trevor Story. He's going to get hurt. He's not going to repeat his, you know, 25-25 season or whatever it's going to be. But I can already anticipate that. Nevertheless, the Red Sox, they're going to play three at home against the A's, and then they're going to play three at Tampa. So really, really nice matchups there. Take a look at them. And then, hey, listen, maybe an NLCS preview with the Dodgers and the Phillies. They are going to play next Monday through Wednesday, and these matchups are going to be sick. So, you know, you got the Phillies, three badass lefties. They're going to pitch Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. It's most likely, the way it's lining up now, it's going to be Ranger Suarez, who will, of course, get the two-start week, Christopher Sanchez, and Jesus Luzardo facing off against Shohei Ohtani, Emmett Sheehan, and then Blake Snell coming off a phenomenal start. Really kind of looks like he's starting to get his juices flowing. Like, it's for the Dodgers, you know, all the fun that is made of how the rotation can never stay healthy. The way that the Dodgers sort of made sure that they didn't, you know, they used other pitching resources earlier in the year and saved, you know, they didn't put Ohtani out there till he was ready. You know, gave Snell plenty of time to get back and fully healthy. Same with Tyler Glasnow, and, you know, even Kershaw up until a point, even though that wasn't very much time, and it's looking good. So the offense, I think, obviously has some holes. But the pitching staff is great. And then, of course, the bullpen, very, very shaky. Tanner Scott struggling, but they have the guys there. So if they get things going at the right time, anything can happen. It's going to be beautiful. I think it's going to be a phenomenal playoffs. Cannot wait for it. But there's still a lot to see as far as what teams are going to get in, because we do have a lot of close races, right? You got the Blue Jays, Yankees, the Red Sox all still in the mix there, fighting for that AL East. You know, you got the Padres a game back of the Dodgers, you know, probably ready to give some payback for last year and everything that happened. And, you know, Mariners and the Rangers chasing the Astros. So these last couple of weeks are going to be super duper exciting. I'm really, really looking forward to baseball here. I was just handling the podcast by myself for 25 minutes. Can you hear me?
I hear you now, bud.
Yeah, I was just holding it down for 25 minutes.
Well, I'm back.
Well, you know how I like to roll, like just a rant, where you're usually probably just like rolling your eyes, like, dude, is Vlad really still talking here? And I got
can
to
you hear
do
me
it.
All right. On these AirPods?
Oh, yeah. It's great. That's cool. Great. Great to have you back, man. I just talking about about the playoff race right now, how, like, it seems like super wide open in so many places. Like, the Padres a game back of the Dodgers. You got that fun AL East race. Yeah, I mean, anything can happen.
Yeah. Well, I missed you, Vlad, but I'm back. Talking playoffs, and you know, I hate to say it, but the Giants actually have a chance to catch the Mets. You know, there's not much wild card action, which is surprising. A lot of division action with the Padres and the Dodgers and the AL East, but the Mets just do not want to win any games, and they're letting the Giants back in. So bless my bleeding heart and get me excited to ruin me, but I'm watching intently now.
Yeah, it's getting good. I want to click in on these, you know, these wild card races here. Let me see here. So, yeah, I mean, at this point, like, yeah, I mean, if you're talking a game and a half back, right? The Giants are from the Mets, and the Reds. I mean, there's some other teams that, I mean, it's like really close off, in that zone with the teams that are around 500, with the Giants, Reds, and Diamondbacks. I mean, even the Diamondbacks could sneak in there for all we know.
Yeah, it's kind of who doesn't want it's going to earn it. You know, none of these teams are playing very well. Giants more recently. Have you seen much of this Drew Gilbert kid, how he acts in the dugout?
No. How does he act?
He is a nut job, like completely spazzing out, but has just changed the energy in the dugout. And it,
I like that.
The Giants have just played so much better since this kid got comfortable, and like he is their mascot. So if you get a chance, look up some clips of him, and it's trippy how spazzy he is.
That's funny. Yeah, I mean, he wasn't hugely on my radar, I mean, at all in DC season, you know, 25-year-old, but he's been playing like every day. He, you know, is the right field, strong side platoon guy. And he's been getting it done, man. He's been hitting, just completely took everything out of, Luis Matos, right? Cause it was supposed to be Luis Matos week. Like we had it half a week and then he was playing every day and now he's not playing anymore.
Yeah, I mean, Gilbert's slugging percentage is over 500, and that's almost unheard of for a Giants outfielder. You know, is this long-term? I don't know. The kid was obviously a first-round pick. A lot of talent in college, been traded twice, so we'll see. You know, it's been fun to kind of watch the energy level come back. Like, I'm talking, like, he's full-on choking Matt Chapman, or Matt Chapman's choking him. Like, it's hilarious watching them in the dugout when they do stuff.
That, I mean, that's fun. That's kind of what you know, that's what you're looking for. Like that ends up becoming like, you know, a team you want to root for. If you don't have a rooting interest, or if you're just like, you know, obviously if you're a Dodger fan or Padres fan, you're not into that. But, you know, if you're a fan of the AL East, you're looking for an NL team to root for. Like that's the good stuff, right? I mean, it's better than you got Tyner Scott saying like, you know, baseball hates me right now.
Yeah. And as a Giants fan, they've been so old and boring for so long. It's just business as usual. Mm-hmm. It's fun to watch a little, you know, young energy, some craziness in the team. And they obviously needed it.
And then another element there, the Giants, is how exceptional Logan Webb has been. I mean, the dude already has 200 strikeouts. Like he's just, every time he's out there, like he's one of those guys, right? Like if you have Logan Webb on your fantasy team and he's going out there and almost like no matter the matchup, you know you're pretty much going to be in good shape.
Yeah, he's fascinating to get the strikeouts back up this year. He really, I know that was one of his goals, was to get 200 strikeouts, but he's leading the NL in strikeouts. It's, you know, he obviously goes out on the bump, pitches seven innings every fifth day. You know, the thing I can't get past with him is that whip. You know, I'm looking at, even in a great season, he's at a 1-2-2. Mm-hmm. That's just not an ace in fantasy. Real life, you know, you couldn't really ask for more of a gamer. But that whip, he's almost like a Kevin Gausman light, where he just gives up so much contact, even with all the strikeouts, that he just gives up so many extra hits. And it really hurts those whip ratios.
Yeah. The on the plus side is, I mean, he wasn't drafted as an ace. So you it was like your whatever fifth round pick, maybe seventh round in a 12 teamer, and you got him as like your three. And then if you got like, you know, some Pivetta later, some Rasmussen later, like you're kind of in good shape. And you know what it is? I think it's in relation to, if you're looking at the sort of like the leaderboard, like, you know, I'm looking at the top 25 pitchers on, you know, Fangraphs player rater, Rasball player rater. And yeah, his whip does stand out. I mean, and that obviously balances out with the, you know, the high strikeouts, the low ERA, and he's got, you know, more wins than just about anyone in baseball. I think maybe only four pitchers have more than his 14 wins. But yeah, you're right. Because it's in comparison to, like, you know, there are a lot of pitchers with a sub one whip this year. So in comparison to that, it's crazy. I mean, like, Pivetta's under one, Skeens and Skubal, obviously. You know, Zach Wheeler was for when he pitched, Brian Wu, Jacob DeGrom, Trevor Rogers, Drew Rasmussen. Like, it's, you know, there's been a Shota. Lot of whip help. Shota, incredible.
Yeah.
that this whip help is so tremendous if you get these guys early in the draft, because we know what it does late. And, you know, to get the Rasmus and those guys that just carry your whip, it is so helpful for the pitching categories.
Yeah, I mean, it's I mean, just like the fact that, you know, the pitchers really didn't bomb this year, right? Remember, we were talking about how, remember the discussion at the end of the year, right? Where, well, yeah, I know some pitchers have bomb, of course, but I'm just like, from the perspective of, we were talking about last year, how, hey, maybe Jacob DeGrom is, you know, we went on the limb, maybe Jacob DeGrom is safer than, like, you know, Paul Skeens, you know, like, you know.
Both pretty good. If only Paul Skeens wasn't on the Pirates.
Yeah. I mean, nevertheless, there are only two guys earning $30+ right now. Skubal's kind of, you know, far and away in his own stratosphere. But Skeens, I mean, he's got an under 2 ERA, which is insane. And he's been catching up on the wins. So he's got 10. Skubal's got 13. So it's, you know, it's not as crazy as it was when we were looking at it 3 months ago.
So fascinating conversation for next year. And I know we're still finishing up this year, but who is the SP4 next year in draft season? You know, you got to believe Zach Wheeler is not going to be healthy moving into next year with his blood clot, which is really sad, because, man, he's so good. You know, there's not really a clear cut four. There's this easy top three, right? With Skubal, Skeens, and Crochet. I really can't pinpoint who that four or five is going to be moving into the draft season.
I mean, I can tell you some of the, you know, clear candidates. Obviously, Hunter Brown, I think, because he has been incredible since the second half of last season. And outside of Skubal and Skeens, there's nobody even, you know, remotely close on the ERA. We're excluding Trevor Rogers here. And, I mean, his ERA is at 2.25 this year. You know, a guy that we kind of, you know, was higher end on the walks and the whip. That whip is at around one. The strikeouts are up and everything. Looking at the Fangraphs player rater, he's basically fifth, tied with Pivetta for fifth in earnings at $26. And that's with 11 wins. So he's just got some bad luck on the wins. So I think he's kind of like a top candidate around there.
Yeah. Another name that stands out is Yamamoto on the Dodgers. Really, he's come into his own this year as an ace. You know, the thing holding him back is that every 6 day instead of every 5th day pitching is going to limit the starts and the wins. Only 11 wins on the Dodgers, but has been a bona fide ace when he's on the mound.
Yeah, he's been great. That was one of my, I forgot, what do we call him, like, stakeholders, my guys, I don't know, whatever it is. I don't know what the hell the fantasy football people call it these days. Whatever it is, that's probably pretty annoying anyway.
Flag plant.
Yeah. I will not. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I can't do that. By the way, I feel like I can get away with any hot takes that I can in football now, since I'm not officially, I don't write fantasy football anymore, like for the first time in a decade. And I can just be a player, which is cool. Mm-hmm. Although I got a bunch of people asking, you know, hey, where's your fab? But which is cool. Hey, listen, Nelson Souza is the man. He will take good care of you if you're not there. Get that FTN high stakes. And what was I going to say? Oh, like, but I sometimes have tweets and I just don't say anything. I know I'm pivoting here for a bit, but like, you know, and I know you're more practical. You're a much better fantasy football player than I am, and, you know, much better track record. But like, I'm looking at, like, it's the same shit all the time. All of a sudden, it's like, oh my God, Isaiah Pacheco's usage, oh, you must sell him for pennies on the dollar. Or, you know, oh, Kenneth Walker, he's done. It's, you know, Charbonnet, it's over. You know, Josh Downs is dead. That's fine. Tyler Warren, you know, for life. I understand and, you know, I'm not trying to get into football here too much. Maybe some people might turn off at this point. But, like, just because of 1 week of usage, sure, it's like a trend, but it's like as small a sample as you can get. And you just, you know, if you're in like a league like ours, I can understand like benching, you know, like a Josh Downs, obviously probably bench him this week. But like, if you're in a trade league and you spent like, you know, 6th round on Pacheco, why would you trade him for nothing? I'm sorry. I just had a rant there.
It's a good point. And it is so much different than baseball because, you know, there's only 14 weeks before the playoffs. So each week that you play in fantasy football is, you know, magnified so much, and these trends are ingrained so much, but you look at it, a lot of these teams, this was almost like another preseason game. They just weren't ready to play. So yes, that's ultimate football mindset is overreaction. There's a lot of times you need to react to be successful in fantasy football, not overreact, but you can't underreact either to a lot of these things. But yeah, cutting Pacheco in the sixth round or trading him for nothing. If you were on him to start, this usage is scary, but you can't give up on him that easy. Kenneth Walker, same thing. There's obviously some confirmation bias, a lot of victory laps, which we hear in fantasy baseball, but fantasy football, just the dialogue is awfully maddening if you really listen to it, because there's all of these victory laps. These, I was right. And then 3 weeks later, you don't hear from them because they were wrong.
Yeah, but thankfully, fantasy receipts catch them. Now that I'm on the other side of this and I won't be caught by them for anything because they don't care about what I say, I like to see it when they hang someone to dry.
Oh, everybody cares a lot.
Yeah, this is true. This is true. And listen, we'll have an episode where we're talking about our dubs and L's, I'm sure, here before, you know, we end things. But like, listen, I mean, at least I didn't AKA flag plant on, you know, like, I don't think I lost people leagues this year with advice of like Jung-Hoo Lee, Jonathan India, and, you know, some of the later round guys, because they were later round guys, right? I don't think, you know,
just Roki, buddy.
Yeah, please don't remind. But listen, most of the people didn't follow that trend. I was the one setting highs. I was the one, nobody was going along with it. So I took those huge L's by myself. And most of those were in managed leagues where I could, you know, kind of fix those things up and get the ratios still.
Well, and honestly, Vlad, that's one of the things I respect most about you, is that your analysts, like your analysis, you put out there for the world to see, and then you back it up with your drafting, your fab. You are not playing games. You're not hiding anything. This is what I believe in. This is what I'm going to do. Come get me. And I think that's what makes you one of the best players / analysts there is in the industry, because there's so many people that don't give all the information. And they just want to, you know, I'm going to give them 80% and keep the 20% for myself. You know, you sign up to do this job and you give the information, and it helps so many players. And it's more kudos to you that you do that, because it makes, you know, fantasy baseball that much more difficult for you to compete in.
Yeah. And it's been harder. I appreciate it. And I mean, it's been even harder in general. Like, you know, there's some points in the year the fantasy is like, you know what, some of the stuff is so luck based. Like there's, you know, there's a lot of the same people win, or at least it seems like a lot of the same people are winning kind of all the time. But really, people have good years, people have bad years, you know, mediocre years, like all, you know, kind of people in the NFBC community. And of course, there are people that are better than others and people that have better processes in all facets, whether that be game theory, you know, player analysis, all that. It's good to have all those, you know, to have like something you're really good at. But like a lot of the best players, they have strengths in all the components of, you know, of being a good fantasy player. That's how they kind of stay consistent at the top.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, it's still luck. I mean, poker, put yourself in a position to win, right? But it's still luck. You can get bad breaks. Injuries happen, you know, down years happen, personal lives happen. You know, as much research as we do, who could believe Aroldis Chapman was going to have a 0.67 whip this year? He learned how to throw strikes at 37 years old. I don't care how good you are. You didn't see that coming.
No, that was probably the example I was going to bring up. I mean, it's always been one of the, you know, most dominant relievers for the last plus decade, but I mean, never had ratio. I mean, just unhittable. The ratios are insane. And like, you know, like, trust me, when I have Carlos Estevez on every main event, you know, all my main event teams, it's been like a Estevez, Palencia, and Devin Williams. I've had that trio pretty much. I've, you know, dropped Devin since, but like Estevez, like I don't need anyone else. Like everyone, you know, closers come and go. And that dude, I remember in the draft, I'm like, you know what? He just like, he is the hired gun. Like we talked about it. We know Lucas Erstig's probably a better pitcher, more dominant stuff, whatever. And then, you know what? It's just Estevez been getting it done. Not a lot of strikeouts, whatever. But like every time I look at a box score, I'm catching up on games and I see like, you know, 4-2 Royals. Like, ah, there it is again. Another one for Estevez.
Yeah, I just, and he's, it's not been fluky either. He's actually been legitimately good, skill set behind it. Like, you know, a couple of years ago, it was like, oh, he's just, you know, smoke and mirrors like Kyle Finnegan. Mm-hmm. But Estevez has been legitimately good. You know, one of the guys I want to talk about for next year is Trevor Rogers. You know, we all bought in on him, I believe, 3 years ago as this breakout guy in Miami. And then he burnt us. Is this real?
I mean, it's hard. It's like, it's different than like a Tyler Fitzgerald, you know, Nolan Jones, right? It is a hitter and pitcher. It's just kind of different animals. Like Ron Chandler, right? The great, said a long time ago, once you show, you know, display a skill, you own it. Mm-hmm. And you know, that's what we saw that season with the Marlins, when it was, you know, his, you know, sort of first full season. And it's been a struggle since then. I mean, he's been in Patrick Corbin territory since, and has made like, you know, 50 starts in between these two good seasons. And it's been absolutely brutal. And obviously we write a guy like that off. Granted, you know, things like the home run rate, you know, it's like a 0.28 home run, you know, 0.28 home runs nine, that'll, you know, normalize towards, you know, his career average, which is still low. It's still like under one home run nine, which is good. His BABIP has been ridiculously low. It's like a 236. His career mark is like 300. I mean, there's some give back there. This is a guy with a, you know, 1.5 ERA in 15 starts, and his xFIP of Sierra is like two runs full higher than that. It's, you know, it's close to 3.4, 3.6, which is fine. I mean, that would still be a good pitcher if that's the case. But the most impressive part of the guy, what I'm seeing this year, is his control. Like, the walk mm-hmm. rate has been phenomenal, and he's doing it in a tough division, in a tough ballpark.
Yeah. You know, and we're not talking a small sample size, like, you know, the COVID shortened season when Kenta Maeda went nuts. This is 95 innings, 15 starts. It's more than half a season, and you're at a 0.87 whip, like $19 of value in a half a season's hard to do for a pitcher. He's been that good. So I believe I'm buying in on him, and his matchups haven't been easy either. He's just been mowing people down. Doesn't matter who's in front of him. So he's going to be a fascinating guy draft season next year to see what his cost settles in at.
Another, I guess, guy I wanted to ask you about, he's been equally as dominant, but over a longer stretch, is Andrew Abbott of the Reds. You know, strikeouts a little bit below, you know, K per nine, and you know, an ERA has been maintaining under three. You know, the WHIP 113. You know, kind of low on the wins, but I mean, he's been phenomenal. I mean, that the Reds have changed like this year as far as like matchups are concerned. It used to be like, oh, going to Great American, stream your hitters, and now that has changed because the pitching staff is, you know, pretty awesome.
It's kind of funny that, you know, the 24th, 25th, and 26th pitcher rate are all Reds, you know, Lodolo, Green, Abbott. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he hasn't been a guy that I've really been interested in. I got to do a deep dive on him in the offseason and really see if it's real or not. But everything looks pretty dang good.
Yeah, I want to check out, I mean, I'm probably close to wrapping up here. I wanted to look at some, like, you know, ERA versus you know, versus FIP, right? Like, mm-hmm. just to see a little bit of that kind of first step of looking to see, you know, lucky, unlucky guys have been, what are their home run rates, their BABIPs, whatnot. And you know, I mean, it's all Contara is still the guy that stands out. He's the guy that is, you know, quote unquote, the unluckiest, because his ERA is still like around 5.5, and you know, Sierra and xFIP is like a run and a half. It's closer to 4, 4.5. And then Dylan Cease, really, that's kind of the poster boy for it all, because people spent high draft capital for him. And he's, you know what, you know, back to the 10% walk rate, a 134 whip. He's really hurt people. So I wonder, you know, does he fall out of the top 100? Because there are a lot of good pitchers coming in.
Yeah, and there's going to be value to be had, right, with those strikeouts with Cease, with Alcantara coming off his first healthy season back. I think both those guys are going to bounce back big next year for value. You know, SP4 moving in the next year, you know who it's going to be. Christopher Sanchez.
What, are we sharing a brain right now? Like, what's going on with this late night? You know, that you switch to a, you know, to the laptop and that's working, and all of a sudden we're like, we're vibing here. It's exactly how I was going to bring up, and I was going to take it back to that SP4 conversation. Yes, yes, Hunter Brown or Christopher Sanchez for sure. People love him. I love him.
Yeah,
love him.
I don't. I think there's going to be a little give back on Sanchez. I don't think he has enough strikeouts to get there, but man, has he paid off that helium in draft season this year?
Yeah, you know, we talked about it, whatever it was, a month ago. That group of players, pitchers, that, you know, where at a certain point in the season, we all individually, before, like, you know, content started coming out, where we were like all kind of drafting, or at least guys that I had way above VDP, you know, I'm not trying to talk from a personal position, but it, you know, it's the case. Guys like Christopher Sanchez, Nick Pivetta, when he just got traded to San Diego, Drew Rasmussen, a lot of these guys, we were higher than them, you know, 50, 40 overall picks ahead of ADP. And not saying that we were responsible for, because other sites, other people, other analysts, other, you know, NFBC players, they also love these guys. But we talked about it. Once it comes to main event season and the live season, you just don't have a chance. Oh, Robbie Ray's in that combo. You can't get those guys. Like, those guys that were going 150 in DC season, we're now going like 65, 70, you know?
Yeah, I think Sanchez went fourth round in a couple mains, which was nuts. And it's a good pick. Can't say anything different. Yeah.
Yeah. There's something about, if you are doing the DC, you know, you're doing the draft champion season, you need to be able to kind of quickly pivot and, you know, knock whatever that bias is called out of your head. Like, just forget about the fact that that's what they were. That was the price, right? It's a, you know, it's a moving target with more competitive people, and you got to move along with the target or just stay away and find an alternative.
Yeah, it's so hard to disassociate the early prices, but if you believe in the guy, set your rankings and set your own ADP like you do with VDP and get him where you have to.
And then, you know, a guy that I really wasn't on at this time, or this preseason, no special attachments whatsoever, but that was Nathan Eovaldi. Unfortunately, his season fell short, but I mean, what would the ERA would have even ended up at? I mean, his ratios, 130 innings with basically 130 strikeouts, was 1.73 on the ERA and 0.85 on the WHIP. Just incredible stuff at his age.
Is that good? I think it's pretty good. I mean, he was mispriced in draft season coming off another injury last year. He's going to be a little depressed next year, but he's going to get expensive. And that age with that injury history, it's going to be tough. But he carried a couple of my teams this year.
Yeah, and then, you know, good old Max Fried. Carlos Rodon's another guy that people just weren't into, just was falling down drafts. And those guys have been getting it done. Ranger Suarez, incredible. Also, again, he's similar to Webb, right? He's not quite with the strikeouts, but the WHIP's all is a little high. The ratio is always great, and then, you know, lots of win support, run support, which is good.
Yeah, Kevin Gausman, complete game shutout today. Mm-hmm. You know, his WHIP's all of a sudden at a 103. His strikeouts aren't there what they used to be, but he kind of reinvented himself again, mm-hmm. turning back into a bottom end ace.
And then, yeah, two more guys I wanted to mention. Cade Horton, mm-hmm. he's one of those guys that's been, according to the numbers, he's been a little lucky because the the strikeout rate's a little lowish. The xFIP here are much higher than the ERA. But, I mean, you know, he's got an ERA under two, under three. And, I mean, he's got 10 wins, and, I mean, just cranking him out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's going to be fascinating with all these young arms coming up too, how they slot in next year. The Yuri Perez, the Mizorowski, the guys coming off of injury, Garrett Cole.
Forgot about that guy exists.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be fascinating next year how all these pitchers come back. Shane Bieber, where does he slot in now that he's pitching healthy again? So, you know, let's finish this year off strong, but it's fun to dream on draft season again, because you know that is the most fun part.
last guy I wanted to mention was this guy has the among pitchers with 100 plus innings pitched, he's got the highest ERA FIP differential, and it's -142. So he's got a 3.17 ERA. All of his indicators are around like 4.5, 4.6. It's pretty crazy. And he also, by the way, is the MLB walks leader. So 12% walk rate.
Yeah, that's going to be hard to sustain.
Yeah. Other than that, you know, I already touched on the FAB. I don't know, kind of an early look. I think the only, you know, if you have any takes or thoughts on this Connolly Early kit.
I thought it was a made up name. You know, everybody's stashing Kyle Harrison, and this guy comes up and the lefty and looks what Kyle Harrison was supposed to be. 11 strikeouts. It can't start a career better than that. So I'm interested.
Yeah, I took a huge, I'm taking a huge L. Luckily, the Discord doesn't give me too much crap, but somebody asked about, hey, should I start this Connolly Early kid? Or it was like versus, I think it was like Zebby Matthews against the Angels. And, you know, I took the opportunity for an Erickson special. And I said, I think it's a bit premature to choose the, you know, making the start with Early. So go Zebby. So I took a huge L. I looked at that box score. I'm like, oh no, I hope I didn't crush someone's
playoffs. It's the right process. So in Sacramento is not a fun place to start your career with the way that ball flies out of there, but they could not touch him that game.
Yeah. Yeah. That was something. Other than that, I mean, dude, I don't know if there's anything else. I kind of went over already, like sort of when you were out, kind of went through our outline and talked about some of the people that are in the mix for some of these, you know, championships, about how people, you know, you see a lot of people drafting out of the 13, 14 slot, a lot of Scoobles on people's teams, just kind of reinforces the value of starting pitchers, especially if you're getting a lot of, you know, good guys lately. You know, yeah, not seeing a lot of, you know, I didn't click down through all the teams and all the overalls, but not seeing a lot of Judges or Otani teams really, because so many people are going, you know, are on track for like 30-30. It's crazy.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I'm really glad I was able to give you that spotlight, that platform to have that 20 minutes of just Vlad time. I know you enjoyed it, but I missed you. I was glad I was able to get back on. Sorry for the technical difficulties, but excited to talk baseball this week. Excited to finish the season strong.
Yeah, it's funny because I think you came on right around the time, and trust me, you will not be shocked. I think I was talking about my hockey injury and getting back. I totally pivoted. And then I try to go back to, I said something about ice, and I had something in my head, and I'm like, speaking of ice, I was going to, you know, throw a baseball player out there, and I just freaking ate it. But I'm not going to edit it. I'm not going to take it out. I am unapologetically me, and this is us. This is the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast, me and Jason.
It's a late night Vlad.
Late night gut and booms. That is it, y'all. We took about an hour of your time. Hope you enjoyed it. A couple episodes left here in the regular season. Wishing you lots of luck here towards the end. Win those leagues, spend those last few dollars wisely, and let's make some money. For Jason Anthony, I'm Vlad Sedler. This is the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast, and we'll talk to you next week.